Blog Talk Radio.
Otto Warmbier died as a result of, I assume, torture of some kind. Maybe they put his head underwater too long and he went into a seizure, or maybe they drowned him or choked him, or who knows what they did. But this young American, so full of promise, so intelligent, and a very upbeat, outgoing person, stood for stealing a poster. Now, one of the interesting stories that I've got for you is that the roommate of Otto Warmbier believes that it was a setup, that his the video of him stealing the poster was not even him, that the North Koreans just wanted to take someone and make him an example. So very, very weird. But anyway, good morning, 20th June, and 6:07, unprecedented days of heat. So I hope you're hanging in there, got your swamp cooler turned on or your air conditioner going. This is not the month to miss your electricity payment, trust me. Got a fair number of stories, but I want to spend some time getting into the murder of Otto Warmbier in a kangaroo court in a communist country halfway across the world. Don't forget, it all comes back to Marxism over there and for the left over here. Really tragic, but that is the result of failed government. Here's Trump on this.
I wanted to pass on word that he's just passed away. He spent a year and a half in North Korea. A lot of bad things happened, but at least we got him home to be with his parents, where they were so happy to see him, even though he was in very tough condition. But he just passed away a little while ago. It's a brutal regime, and we'll be able to handle it.
Well, I mean, what do you think we should do? In my opinion, it would be great to go and drop a bomb on the leader of that country who's going around threatening people and has his own family members killed. And why not just go in and kill him, you know? Because he's the one who's responsible for the torture and death of this young student. And I don't know what else to say about it. Here's another one from WCPO.
Otto Warmbier has said goodbye. UC Medical Center says the tri-state native died at the hospital this afternoon. Warmbier returned to Cincinnati last week after being held captive in North Korea for more than a year and a half. He was in an unrest when he returned. Doctors say he suffered a severe neurological injury. He wasn't able to speak, see, or react to verbal commands. President Donald Trump has been briefed on the situation, and tonight he is sharing his condolences with the Warmbier family.
Just wanted to pass on word that Otto Warmbier has just passed away. He spent a year and a half in North Korea. A lot of bad things happened, but at least we got.
All right, we heard this. And here's a little bit more.
Warmbier was surrounded by family at the time of his death. In a statement, his parents said, quote, "It would be easy at a moment like this to focus on all that we lost. Future time that won't be spent with a warm, engaging, brilliant young man whose curiosity and enthusiasm for life knew no bounds. But we choose to focus on the times we were given to be with this remarkable person." New at 7, Ohio senators are reacting to Warm Bier's death. Senator Sherrod Brown says, quote, our hearts are broken for Otto's family.
Who cares what those politicos say? Got some more interesting news, though. Do you remember when Obama very ostentatiously goes and gets this deal done with Iran? And there's Americans that are being held captive, and he didn't even ask for them to be returned, even though he was flying it. And what was the president's purpose in flying in billions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars in cash to Iran? Here's the guy, the greatest genius of the age, Obama, doesn't even know how to play poker. I mean, what a sick guy, you know, what an inexperienced, self-satisfied, far-left clown that was leading this country. But Trump is the problem? Here's Otto Warm Bier's father saying the Obama administration told his family to be quiet.
For so long. As you know, the doctors there will be holding a press conference this afternoon to discuss Otto's medical status. And I will leave the details of such matters to them. We also want to thank Senator Rob Portman, who has stood by us throughout this entire ordeal. Last evening, we received a very nice phone call from President Trump, who told us that Secretary of State Tillerson worked hard to help bring Otto home. We are extremely grateful for their efforts and concern. I would like to highlight this morning the bittersweet feeling that my family has. Relief that Otto is now home in the arms of those who love him. And anger that he was so brutally treated for so long. We went for 15 months without a word from or about Otto. It was only a week ago that we were informed that the North Korean government now claims he was in a coma for almost all of that time. Even if you believe their explanation of botulism and a sleeping pill causing the coma, and we don't, there is no excuse for any civilized nation to have kept his condition secret and denied him top-notch medical care for so long. When Otto was first taken, we were advised by the past administration to take a low profile while they worked to obtain his release. We did so without result. Earlier this year, Cindy and I decided the time for strategic patience was over, and we made a few media appearances and traveled to Washington to meet with Ambassador Joe Yoon at the State Department. It is my understanding that Ambassador Yoon and his team, at the direction of the president, aggressively pursued resolution of the situation. They have our thanks for bringing Otto home. I know you have many questions about what transpired. So do we. We have few answers. There's no excuse for the way the North Koreans treated our son.
So the Obama administration did tell the father to be quiet. Here's a little bit from Otto Warm Bier's salutatorian speech before he went to the University of Virginia and before he went to North Korea and lost his life.
But we feel like we lost a friend, a neighbor, a nephew. Otto gave a speech at his Wyoming class of 2013 graduation. So what you will see next, among other things, are pieces of that.
He went to Wyoming High School in Ohio. He's not from Wyoming.
We hope we'll give you a peek at the young man just 4 short years ago before North Korea, when he stood on the precipice of what could be.
Graduation 2013, and Otto Warm Bier is quoting the finale of the TV show, The Office.
I wish there was a way to know that you're in the good old days before you've actually left them. To me, that one sentence completely captures the feeling of this graduation. This is our season finale. This is the end of one great show, but just the beginning to hundreds of new spinoffs.
Otto would go on to the University of Virginia to study commerce and economics.
We know where everyone is going next year. We know where everyone has come from. We know how to make each other comfortable. We know each other's family. We know each other's friends. We know each other's siblings. A lot of us even know each other's grandparents. We know when someone is struggling, and we come together as a class to make things better.
Otto is a sweet, loving, kind person, and that's what we loved about him. I'm proud of Otto and the courage he showed by going to North Korea and having that adventurous side to him.
Otto's father, Fred Warmbier, talked of his son last week, 2 days after Otto returned from the clutches of the North Korean regime, already in a coma, clinging to life.
What did I say to my son? I knelt down by his side and I hugged him. And I told him I missed him and I was so glad that he made it home.
An extraordinary young man, young mind and young life gone, long before anyone would have imagined.
No matter where we go or what we do, though, we will always have this group here. Even when Wyoming class of 2013 is a thing of the past, we'll have the support of all of these people around us. We'll have the knowledge we gained as a group, and we'll have the big rerun. The memories we've created to be played over and over again. Thank you.
These people are so sick, you know, they have to be held accountable for this. We ought to find out where the leader of North Korea is and just send in one missile through his bathroom window and just blow him to smithereens. We'll take a break here. And this is in part the result, not fully, but certainly a lot of it has to do with the way the Obama administration operated. And this idiotic decisions that they made and the bad foreign policy that they were running. Can you imagine we're dealing with Iran and we give them everything they want, including billions of dollars, much of it in cash, and we don't even ask for our own people to be released. That's the kind of person Obama is. And the crap storm that we're dealing with right now is a result of his disgusting and anti-American holdovers. 618 Kelly O'Connell, just telling you as it is, my opinion. 523-1450, we'll be back. Some headlines for you. Most expensive race in U.S. history. The House race with this guy, Ossoff, who's really just a robot, a leftist robot, who comes in and gives these little speeches and he sounds like a fool. That race is playing out right now with Karen Handel. upset over getting the wrong latte, stabs another customer at Starbucks. Mexico accused of spying on journalists and activists using cell phone malware. Well, at least those ones got to live. Tax cuts are in trouble because of all of the turmoil in D.C. Exactly what the left wanted. Think about North Korea, though, a perfect Marxist state, totally inefficient. The people do not have enough to eat every day unless they're in the government. They got rid of religion and installed a tremendous clown, Little Kim, who has no training. He is just an absolute buffoon. That's who runs their country. That's what leftism is. It's the worship of men. Why? But let me ask you this. Why is it always an incompetent person that rises to the top in leftism, in Marxism, socialism? Why? I'm just curious. Couple drown after car rolls into river as they're having sex in the back seat. What a way to go. 73% of people say political debate encouraging violence. Bernie tells supporters to fight back every way you can. Of course, he couldn't believe that this guy who killed the or tried to kill Scalise was one of his army. Cain Institute, funded by George Soros, of course. They're probably on the same page. McCain needs to retire. If the Republicans got together behind Trump, the Democrats couldn't stop them. That's a fact. Stocks hitting new highs again. The market, jobs market is growing. It's double, growing at double the pace as it was under Obama. Military base used by U.S. forces is a hotbed for HIV. Wow. Spicer is being made the head of all communications in the White House, not getting fired. Tour group, no more Americans to North Korea. Oh, really? Texas kid steps on live grenade while swimming, doesn't get blown up. Carrie Fisher died with heroin, cocaine, and ecstasy in her blood, and possibly morphine. But I'm sure she was a very normal person for Hollywood. Tropic is firing up storms, some of which are coming up into Texas. So hot in Phoenix, they can't fly planes. 24% of Americans don't have a single dollar saved for emergency. Trillions of dollars in savings were evaporated during the Obama Depression. Scalise shooter was an abusive alcoholic foster. It was an abusive alcoholic father. The foster daughter tells the reporters. And W. Bush gaining on Obama in popularity. Obama is just going to go down as worse than Jimmy Carter. That's got to be his future. What a terrible person. All right, here's the roommate who said that Otto Warmbier was set up by the North Koreans.
Is that really American college student Otto Warmbier ripping a propaganda poster from the wall? Or is it an imposter? For the first time, Otto's roommate on that ill-fated visit to North Korea is speaking out.
Do you believe that that's Otto in that video?
Englishman Danny Grattan was the only other single guy on the trip, so he was paired up with Otto, seen here in video recorded in North Korea and just released by his family.
In my heart of hearts, the guy I knew for 3 or 4 days was not that type of guy. We never mentioned anything remotely like that. We'd already bought some souvenirs.
These are new photos of Otto sightseeing in North Korea. Danny witnessed North Korean security officers putting Otto under arrest at the airport as he tried to board a plane.
He was tapped on the shoulder by a guard. No words were spoken. We got on so well, I sort of laughed towards Otto and said, well, we mightn't see you again. Of course, I didn't realize the irony of them words.
The tour company that arranged for Otto's trip is now coming under fire. Young Pioneers Tours sold the North Korean tour as a destination your mother wants you to stay away from. The website even says North Korea is extremely safe and claims tourists are cherished and well taken care of. Don't tell that to Otto's father, who denounced the North Korean government at his dramatic press conference Thursday.
North Korea is a pariah regime. They're brutal and they're terroristic.
Doctors are now trying to solve the mystery of how the 22-year-old University of Virginia student was left in a coma. Was it botulism combined with a sleeping pill, as claimed by the North Koreans?
There's no sign of botulism whatsoever. That we can rule that out because the neurological testing they did not show that.
Or was it a vicious beating?
We see no evidence of an acute or healing fracture, including the skull.
Doctors agree that it would take a miracle for him to return to normal life.
He's not going to recover brain function at this point. He's unfortunately at a state where he's probably going to be for the rest of his life.
There goes that idea. Now, here is Otto Warmbier's dad on Tucker. Well, let's get to a little bit of hometown news first. Oh, man, what a sad day, huh? So many evil things. This may have happened outside of Obama, but so many evil events, so many evil, so much evil aftermath from Obama, a guy that didn't love America and wanted to beat us down into being just another globalist entity. And I hope that we blow the leader of North Korea to smithereens. That's my hope today. 629 Kelly O'Connell. AM Las Cruces 523-1450. All right, so what killed this? I really actually don't even feel like talking about this anymore. It's so upsetting, but a little bit more on this kid that got murdered by North Korea. What killed him? Dr. Janet Neshawait weighs in on this from today on Fox News.
Discuss what we know about the cause of Otto Warmbier's death is Dr. Jeanette Neshawait, a board-certified doctor in family and emergency medicine. Good to see you.
Good morning.
What might an autopsy tell us about what happened while Otto Warmbier was in North Korea?
So, Lauren, an autopsy can give us a lot of information. For example, it can tell us if Otto had any underlying medical problems. For example, did he have a small heart murmur, or did he suffer from a virus possibly that ate away at some of his tissue? Was there a parasite in his system? It definitely can give us a lot of information and can help answer, give us the answers to some questions that we may have. Because right now, it's, you know, we're speculating what caused this, what caused a young, healthy, intelligent young man who went to North Korea without any medical problems to be carried out, you know, unconscious in a coma, and in a coma for more than a year, for a little over a year. So we need to definitely find out what caused this and look to see if North Korea needs to be sanctioned for improper treatment and abuse of this young man.
So this, you mentioned that he was in a coma, it looks like, for about a year. Does that hurt the evidence gathering that the coroner's going to need to start that process today? We're assuming, we don't know, but does that hurt that?
It definitely makes you wonder, why did they hide it? Why did they hide the fact that he was unconscious, that he was very ill? Why did they wait now until a week ago to release him? That just tells me that foul play has occurred. But, you know, it's amazing with medical technology what can be done and what can be discovered with an autopsy. So I'm anxious and curious to see what it will show. But what happened is such a tragedy, and hopefully no one will ever have to endure what he endured, because North Korea has been known to be brutal to its prisoners, rape, murder, and
starve them.
Exactly. And they still have camps, from what I understand, that exist that they, of course, deny.
And they are still holding three other Americans hostage.
Well, that lady didn't have much. Now, if you get in trouble in Korea, North Korea, it's not just you who gets sent to a concentration camp. Three generations get sent there. And the camps are extraordinarily brutal. And let me ask you this. What exactly did these countries that do these type of things achieve? What did Russia achieve? Russia fell apart because it didn't have a way to fund its military and feed its people. China had a revolution. The leader of China went to Singapore, which was a British colony, and couldn't believe what a mighty mighty place it was economically. And he just asked for, how do you guys do this? And he took these ideas and implemented them in China. That's where the Chinese Revolution came from. Adam Smith, Britain, wealth of nations, capitalism. It's like gravity. You can't fight it. But what do these idiotic regimes gain? What do they gain by all the torture? Tyranny, you know? What's the upside to tyranny? And yet that's what the left is in love with. The left is just fascinated. The left didn't have enough good things to say about Castro, even though he was a murderous dictator, et cetera, et cetera. Now, should the U.S. retaliate? Here's a little clip on that. You know my feeling. This is from yesterday from Fox News.
Ask whether Europe is losing the fight against radical Islamic terror, and the late breaking news on Otto Warmbier is Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, Senior Fellow with the London Center for Policy Research. Welcome. Good to have you here.
Thanks, Trish. Good to be here.
Let's start with Otto Warmbier, the 22-year-old American student who was there in North Korea. What do you think happened? Because basically they sent him home, and this poor kid, he died days later.
They tortured him to death. And my son's 23-year-old, and I can completely sympathize and feel terrible for the parents of this kid. He was essentially repeatedly subjected to sodium pentothal, which is a truth serum, if you will. It's been used in a lot of the spy movies. And what happens, Trish, if you overuse that, if you use it constantly, it basically burns the brain out. So this kid was essentially, his brain was burned out.
So why did they send him back? I mean, why didn't they finish the job there in North Korea? Why did they send him back?
I think President Trump did pressure on him. This is one of the things he did pick up and look at when he first came into office. And this was in January. So 150 days in, you know, this was a result. And the other thing, I think the North Koreans are recognized that they had done such grave damage to this kid. There was no going back. So I'll say this to be very clear. I think we're going to retaliate. I think this should not stand. Well, look.
What do you mean?
Kelly,
during the Cold War, Trish, we had a number of organizations that did dirty tricks.
Let me put you on hold because you're not going to be able to hear me, okay?
Kim Jong-un should not believe that we will not seek vengeance, righteous vengeance, for these sorts of things. And I think we need to start looking at how we can do this sort of
thing. You know, one of the things, Colonel, is it seems like we play by the rules, right?
While
nobody else is playing by that set of rules. And we have very prescribed things. For example, you can't go out and knock off a dictator via an assassination attempt, yet somehow that dictator that's doing really bad things to their people is allowed to exist.
Right.
And we go and bomb places and people are hurt as casualties when you just want to get the bad guy.
Yeah, so this is where we need to look at our policies again. Again, during the Cold War and other things that I've worked on, you should be as severe as your enemy. The enemy does not understand being nice. And until you get serious about intimidating and affecting that enemy in a very personal way, you will continue to see things like this happen. So.
Well, and you think about this poor kid who was captured by North Koreans.
Yeah.
At a time when President Obama was there, and we didn't do a whole lot. There was this sort of passive attitude.
Leading from behind, absolutely.
All right.
Leading from behind. What an idiot. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Jim.
Hey, Jim, good morning. Thanks for calling. Hope you're well, and what's on your mind?
Well, what happened to Otto is happening to hundreds of thousands of people all over the world. I mean, You can't go to these countries. Well, he didn't do anything wrong, but listen. Does anybody think you can go to these foreign countries like Pakistan, Kazakhstan, Iran, and say anything bad and hold up a head of the president or talk about blowing up their capital, and they ever think they're going to see the light of day again?
Good point. I mean, I don't think this kid did anything wrong, but I hear what you're saying is that what is taken for granted here and used to attack the president is not even allowed in other places.
Oh, these people would never see the light of day again. And this is not being taught in our schools. I remember in 1966, our high school teachers told us how lucky you kids are to have been born in this country. Those of us that have traveled around the world have seen poverty and no freedom. There is no upward mobility in most of the world, except here in the United States. And these kids are just being brainwashed, thinking they can break windows, smash cars, and this disruptive stuff.
Well, Jim, the sad thing is they don't know who they are. It's the greatest tradition, the greatest history of any country in the world. And we were huge underdogs. And on principle, we fought our way towards freedom. And we continued to do that for hundreds and hundreds of years. And now you're teaching these kids just based on nothing that this is the worst country in history.
So many of these kids have grown up without a mother, a father, a broken family step. Then they go to college and they hear these leftist university professors brainwash them into thinking capitalism is bad, socialism is good, and they resist it. This is the educational system in this country doesn't teach all the people that have died on foreign lands so you kids could be free. They have no idea. They're so spoiled.
No, but I mean, these kids are ruined because they can't. You know, this is the same thing with entitlement. An entitled person's never happy because they're always owed something from somebody else, and that's a that is something that socialism has seeded into this, the mentality of this country. But if you teach people that you live in a bad country, but you don't really have a logical way of convincing people of that, you're using propaganda to manipulate people, and it becomes a religion, and it's in their bones, and you can't get rid of it, and they're just made idiots.
Yes, they think they're all victims.
Yeah, exactly. I got to take a break here. Was there any other points?
We'll see you later.
Good call. All right, folks, got to take a little break here, but you take propaganda. What you first you do is you strip away the education system, which was done under John Dewey. Not the Dewey Decimal System guy, John Dewey, who was a far lefty. Get rid of all the classical education and bring in experiential learning. Put kids in a room full of stuff and they'll teach themselves. After decades of that, people have forgotten what education is, and now they're ripe for propaganda. Why? Because that's the only way leftism can get a toehold. It's very diabolical. The only way leftism can be believed by masses of people is propaganda. Propagandize them. And it goes way beyond logic. It is manipulation of the most, like I say, devilish kind. 643 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523 1450. We'll be right back. Some local weather for you. That was the first that I heard that the kid was given sodium pentothal and his brain was burned out. Makes sense to me. You know, they don't have any human rights in these countries because they don't have the concept of the human right, because they do not believe in the immortality of the soul, and they don't believe in religion. They don't believe in the sanctity of human life because they don't believe in religion. And therefore, human beings are just animals, and animals can be infinitely trained to do whatever you want them to. So that's the theory. Now, here's a little bit on truth serum, sodium pentothal.
You've probably seen it on TV or in a movie. A suspect is being interrogated about some crime, and everybody knows he did it, but he won't confess. So an old man in glasses and a lab coat comes in with a syringe full of, like, bright orange stuff, and he pokes it in there, and the guy starts spilling the beans on everything, from the crime all the way to that weird dream he had about his mom in high school. They usually refer to this drug by a nice sciencey-sounding name, sodium pentothal, and the crazy thing is, sodium pentothal is real. It's actually the brand name for sodium thiopental, and it really has been used as a so-called truth drug. Sodium thiopental was invented in 1936 by two chemists in Ohio who were trying to come up with a new painkiller. They were disappointed to find that the drug wasn't at all effective at killing pain unless it was given in really high doses, at which point it just knocked out the patient entirely. Today, the drug is still used as a quick knockout drug, like in the first stage of general anesthesia, and even in lethal injections. But it got another use. The chemist noticed that in smaller doses, sodium thiopental seemed to relax people. That's because sodium thiopental is a barbiturate, a class of drugs that depresses the central nervous system and slows down brain activity. Now, at the time, psychiatrists had been using other types of barbiturates, like sodium amytal, to try to get patients to talk. Sodium amytal was commonly used during the First World War, for example, to get soldiers to open up about traumatic memories from the battlefield. But even in relatively small doses, the drug was a powerful sedative, so it tended to produce, like, sleepier patients than talkative ones. By World War II, psychiatrists were trying similar treatments with sodium thiopental. And soon, they found that in small doses, it could induce a kind of trance-like state in traumatized patients, allowing them to talk about their experiences in a candid way that they never would when fully conscious. Eventually, some scientists began to think that if this chemical could help shocked soldiers talk, maybe it could have the same effect on criminal suspects. Years of research then followed that made some researchers think that they truly had found a truth serum. And it's not hard to see why they thought so. When sodium thiopental...
All right, so that's enough on that. But that gives you a background on it. Take our last break right now. 523-1450 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces. Jim Gaffigan Vegetables.
I wanted to eat something.
Oh, we've got a late call coming in. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell Show's This.
Kay.
What's up, Kay?
I want to know why people are so outraged and shocked at the atrocities that occur when they know beforehand. Why are these people going to places like North Korea? It's really no surprise that they don't play nicely with others.
Well, according to the tour company, it was a safe place to go.
Uh-huh. And I suppose I-75 is a nice, safe place to play when you have nothing else to do. No, I don't buy it. Stay out of those places. That's all I have this point.
Okay. Thank you. Good call. All right. In the meantime, let's blow them up. Let's put a rocket up little Kim's butt and send him home to wherever he thinks the afterlife is, which may be just in the ground, but that's good enough for me. Here's fruits and vegetables.
Recently, I saw an apple, and for a moment, just a moment, I didn't recognize it. I was like, what is that? Oh, that's an apple! So weird to not see it in a pie. But no one really wants fruit. It's too much work with fruit, right? You gotta wash it. You gotta peel off that sticker Al-Qaeda put on there. There's work. Like an orange. Has peeling an orange ever really been worth it? There's not even chocolate in this. And some weirdos, they use the gathering of fruit as an activity. Why don't we go apple picking? Because I'd rather die. You have to pay to pick apples.
Okay, how much do I owe you to work for you for free? Don't rip me off. I'm no dummy.
Yeah, we still act excited when we see fruit. We're like, yay, fruit! At least it's not vegetables. Because no one wants vegetables. When you're at a party and they have a vegetable tray, aren't you almost surprised? You're like, wow, that's a waste of money. Hell, I'd rather eat a candle.
Oh, suddenly I'm the only one here that's eating a candle. Okay, everybody.
No one wants a vegetable tray. Everyone knows crudité is French for throwaway in a couple hours. I feel sorry for those vegetables on the tray. They're like, what am I doing here? I can't compete with pigs in the blanket. I'm a cauliflower, for God's sakes. Like that ranch dressing's going to help? Ranch dressing. Some of us have to settle down with the ranch dressing. The usage is ridiculous.
I love ranch dressing. I like to dip my pizza in ranch dressing.
That's fine. You're just not allowed to vote anymore.
Because ranch dressing, you know how they make ranch dressing?
Buttermilk and sadness.
It's the only ingredient.
Interesting fact, before they came up with ranch dressing, no one had eaten a raw vegetable ever. But we know we don't want vegetables, but we haven't wanted fruit for hundreds of years. That's why there's so many paintings in museums of just bowls of fruit. Because you could start painting a bowl of fruit. You could leave for a couple days, come back. No one would have touched the bowl of fruit. But if you're painting a donut, you better finish it on the first sitting. You can't even take a bathroom break. Hey, what happened to my donut? Your friends are like, oh, some fat guy came in here. Anyway, I'm going to get some milk and take a nap. That's why there's no donut art. Sad, really.
All right, so Otto Warmbier killed. Whether he should have gone to that country or not, they allowed him in there. And the people, well, he was treated like the people are in general, savagely. I've seen videos of little kids walking around in a public square over there, I don't know, 10 years old, no shoes, smoking, looking on the ground for cigarettes to smoke. Dirty. People are emaciated over there. Let's blow up the president. Little Kim, let's blow him up, folks. Let's give him a little dose of his own medicine. Killed his own brother, his uncle, for falling asleep, or I don't even know what his supposed crime was. He put him out in the field and dropped a mortar on him. Must have been dramatic. 659 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1455, 23-1450. It's the 20th. Great to be spending some time with you. We'll be back after a break on the hour. Spent the first hour talking about, besides a few headlines, talking about Otto Warmbier. You just seem like a great kid. And do we need to get revenge on little Kim, who runs Korea, North Korea? Now, here's my feelings. There's a lot of people that are Christians that, or they're kind of principled atheists or agnostics, whatever, some other religion that believe in pacifism. And I think pacifism is something that people do on a personal level. You can't, for example, force your neighbor to be a pacifist, right? It's because you think it's correct. Now, if you're liberal, you're politically correct, you think you can force anybody to do anything that you believe in. All that is necessary is that you have a conviction, then you have the right to project your conviction onto other people and force them to follow it. But anyway, be that as it may, pacifism as a national policy is suicide, although that has filled the minds of many leftists over the years. You have to have a policy, foreign policy with teeth. You can follow Machiavelli if you want, which is a very pragmatic and a very unemotional, very, very, very high-level chess way of interacting with other people, the prince. But the thing is, we need to do something. So what should we do? 5-2-3-14-50. Now, shifting gears, Daniel Henninger on Trump's election causing psychological unhingement. This is a great little clip. Check this out. And it's 7:08, it's the 20th. Connell AM Las Cruces, 5-2-3-14-50. We'll be back after this clip.
A controversial production in New York City of Julius Caesar that depicts a President Trump lookalike character getting assassinated still will go on in front of a live audience. The Public Theater in New York City says the Shakespeare in the Park production will continue, despite yesterday's shooting targeting Republican members of Congress in Virginia. Dan Henninger in today's Wall Street Journal says the show should be canceled. He writes, Donald Trump's election has caused psychological unhingement in much of the population, but the Trump phenomenon only accelerated forces that were plummeting in this direction before the 2016 election. We know that political anger and violence can become mystical in its attraction, especially at the margin for people like political shooter James Hodgkinson. This is a good moment to dial it back. The author of those words, Dan Henninger, the deputy editorial page editor for the Wall Street Journal and a Fox News contributor, joins us now. First of all, on that Shakespeare production, are you surprised that it went on or will go on?
I'm not particularly surprised. I think that the people at the Public Theater who are staging this Trump assassination feel that they're doing something that they're politically obliged to do. And that's kind of what I mean, John, about political disorder syndrome, that there is an unhingement in people's behavior now that isn't merely about politics. There's such an intense emotional component to these things now, a psychological component. And I think those forces have been in play for a while. I mean, we have political town halls are not just full of angry people, they're full of people who are just completely over the top. We've reported for years now on behavior on campuses where people don't really talk at one another. You have to shout down your opponent. And it's this emotional intensity that I think is what has really become kind of dangerous. And I believe it reflects kind of the age of social media that we live in. It really is driven in large part by people reacting to some of the restrictions in politics that they see.
Because in social media, you don't have to interact face to face with anybody. You can just shout or scream at whomever you want.
And consider, we live in kind of a parallel universe, because in social, if you say something wrong about somebody that sort of offends political correctness, you can get shamed on social media. In the workplace, you can now get fired for a long list of offenses that are related to sort of politically sensitive areas. And I think many people feel that this is a very restricted way to live, and that they can disappear into social media, Twitter, their Facebook friends, and it's kind of like a refuge where you just run out full emotion against these dammed up political emotions. And that, I think, is what happened after the Trump victory, that people just became unhinged by the phenomenon. And so you've got someone like Kathy Griffin doing the severed head of Donald Trump, something nobody would have thought possible.
And this James Hodgkinson, the now departed shooter of the congressman and others yesterday, puts on his Facebook page. First of all, he's a Bernie Sanders supporter, volunteered for the Sanders campaign, puts on his Facebook page that Trump is a traitor. And, and ultimately convinces himself, I guess, that should be acted upon.
John, we're really heading into kind of dangerous waters here. I mean, I have to say, there were many of us who thought we were hoping all the way through the years of the Obama presidency that there would be no assassination attempts. And when it was over, breathed a sigh of relief that we had gotten through that. Now the same sort of emotions are in play with the attempted political assassination. That's what it was, of Congressman Scalise. And I think under those circumstances, people should understand emotions are getting dangerous on the left and on the right. And it's time to pull that level of psychological unhingement back. And that's why I thought these people doing this Trump assassination in Central Park really should have canceled that show.
Dan Henninger from the Wall Street Journal. Wise thoughts as always. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
I wanted to bring up something that might seem a little bit unrelated, but just want to throw this out towards you and just kind of
to make the opening
on what's going on right now. We have long lived in an age of science. And since the scientific revolution in the mid 17th century, which occurs in Europe and specifically in London, but is happening all across the European continent and has a gathering of common souls in the Royal Society, where you have the greatest scientist in history, Newton there, and John Locke, who was trained as a physician, and Robert Boyle, and a lot of very important early science people. We have lived in this age for quite a while. Now, this guy who I mentioned before, Comte, this philosopher from France, who ends up going crazy and is never cured, he comes up with this idea called positivism, which is just, understand it this way, that science, that society should be driven by science, scientists, scientific standards. And to a large extent, we do that, you know. But within each person is emotions, experiences, beliefs that transcend anything scientific. That's our daily experience. We interact with the world of science, or the world of modern society, which has computers and cell phones and such. And, you know, you can plug into any news, you know, weather forecast, and they'll all have the same exact temperature. And it gives you the sense that we're all in the same world of facts. But what is happening now in Washington, D.C., and this is a little bit of a kind of a stretched out idea, but I think if you consider it a little bit, you'll see there's some sense to what I'm saying. There is deeply held within each person, beyond any scientific knowledge or commitment, there are beliefs. And a lot of times these beliefs can't be they can't be straightforwardly proved. Maybe they're religious or ideas about various things, various people. What am I getting at? I'm getting at that after the scientific revolution hit the world, people didn't like it to a certain extent. They didn't like the Industrial Revolution, even though the scientific processing of capitalism made us much more efficient and much more wealthy. In the early Industrial Revolution, especially, there was a lot of human suffering. To this day, there are sweatshops across the third world where people are slaving over iPhones and such that we've all heard stories of. But my main point is that when the scientific revolution hits and it creates this gigantic impact, as it is kind of started to play out, the romantic movement is started. The romantic movement is a reaction against the scientific revolution. And a lot of those ideas are with us today. You fight for love. You know, you commit yourself to your ideals and you fight until you die, you know. So there's this guy, Arthur Schopenhauer, who is a German philosopher. And he writes a book called The World as Will and Representation. And he talks about the world being driven by a blind and in what he called an insatiable metaphysical will. I think that what you're seeing in DC is an expression of something that is kind of a continuation of this romantic rejection of science. It is a rejection of common sense and experience and history. It's a rejection of Western democracy and republicanism and capitalism, and in this crazy blind embrace of socialism. And what really strikes my mind and really makes me almost shocked is, except that I've seen it in so many different people in so many different ways, these individuals that come out of Harvard and Yale, Stanford, and the greatest universities in history, and they're obviously smart people, obviously very accomplished, disciplined, focus people who can deal with facts, and they throw facts overboard and they go after somebody like Trump. Trump is, to me, he's kind of a symbol. He's a symbol in a way of the rejection of the elites, of this same group of people. He's also, though, an opportunity to overthrow the order in its worst aspects, political correctness and stuff. But I'm just thinking about all these brilliant, accomplished people, doctors, lawyers, engineers, and none of them can put a good face on socialism, can't defend their ideas, but they'll fight to the death for them. And why can't they put a good face on them? Because they're fundamentally false ideas. I'm just kind of fascinated by that, how the will of people overcomes this deep desire to service your religion. And I'm not talking about Christianity or Islam, although Islam has an element of that that is excessive. But I'm talking about these people that are non-religious, but their religion is socialism, and they'll fight and die for it, and they get involved in public battles to overthrow Trump or somebody else. It could be anybody else, but they're fighting and dying, willing to die, willing to destroy their reputations. Look at Dan Rather. He brought out stuff that was totally false about George W. Bush, was caught, and has spent the rest of his life trying to make up for it and still doing the same thing. But I am impressed that and I'm still kind of working through this 5-2-3-14-50. If you can't follow me, I don't blame you. It's very abstract. It doesn't mean you're not smart. It's just that I'm trying to work through the implications. What is the implication that a group of fanatics has been in charge of the government for decades and they're not religious. They're not, well, they're not Christians. They're not Bible followers. And they will do anything to get their ideas in place. And they will do anything once they're pushed out of power to get back in. And it has nothing to do with facts. But they act like they're the most factual and, you know, devoted to reality people in history. So that if anybody says anything to them that goes against what they believe, they roll out the truth machine. How dare you, you know, create false news, they say. How dare you do this or that, you know, Trump's a liar, this and that. It is surreal. It is, what's going on is surreal. That's how I understand it. You might understand it differently. 523-1450. Feel free to call in. We'll take a break here. We'll be back. 523-1450. Kelly O'Connell, 721. 20th of June. Great to be spending some time with you today. All right, so thinking about that topic, what is driving people? All right, so here's the question, and I have an answer. What is making many, and we're talking tens of thousands of the most elite and highly trained people in America, to make complete fools of themselves in attacking Trump and trying to overthrow the government in their own way and battling for socialism in so many words? And I think that the answer to that is, I could call it love or I could call it religion. And my point here is that the things that stir up your feelings are deeper, are more important. Now, women understand this inherently better than men do, because there's a natural orientation towards that for women. But I think that people are always seeking to service their religion. Now, say a person doesn't have a religion. Everybody believes in something. But a person who's a socialist, and the reason, why do I keep referring to this as socialism? Because a person that I've ever talked to who had any sophistication whatsoever and asked them what they believed, leftist, a person who's progressive, Democrat, fill in the blank, and ask them if they believed in socialism, they say no. And they say, well, you know, I would name 5 or 10 things that were elements of socialism. Do you believe this? Do you believe that? Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Yes. Name all those things. And I said, well, actually, I think you are a socialist because I seem to agree with all the sub elements. So I think what's going on is, getting back to Schopenhauer, it's a fight for will. It's the will. It's the thing that drives people. It's not science. It's not facts. Now, whether it should be a battle over facts is another question, but I don't think it's what is driving people. And I'm hoping this makes sense, because I'm trying to figure out the craziness that's coming out of Washington now. And if it was not Trump, but somebody like Trump, it would be the same thing, because you're fighting for the right to call your religion the number one belief system. And just because your religion just happens to be socialism or derived from Marxism, and even though it's been factually disproved, even during the time of Marx, let alone today, doesn't mean anything, because it is an object of devotion. It is a cult. It is something that people pour their hopes and their dreams and their devotion into. And so at some level, there's no functional difference between Christianity and liberalism, leftism. And so that is why so many people are fighting this fight, and they don't, so many journalists, they don't care if they make absolute fools out of themselves because they're fighting for love. We've all seen people who fell in love and they gave up everything for a partner or a person, even if it totally destroyed their life, put them into grave danger. Well, classic example, Romeo and Juliet, the star-crossed lovers. There's something about servicing a thing that you're deeply devoted to that goes far beyond any commitment to science or facts. Now, these people think that they're, because they're deluded or they're caught up in love or devotion to their deity, they think that the facts are behind them. They're sadly mistaken. But that's how I make sense of what's going on. What's the answer? I will give you what I think the answer is after we hear a little bit of news. 523-1450 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 728, 20th of June. Very hot days these days, literally and figuratively. Be right back. All right, so now that we've discussed my theory of Washington, got a little something here from David Brooks. Getting uncomfortable about the lack of proof or evidence in the investigation of Trump. Brooks is supposedly a conservative at the New York Times. Of course, as soon as he got there, he became a liberal. That's another story. Check this out.
Yeah, I generally agree. I mean, I don't think it's a bad thing for Donald Trump to be fighting with the courts on this issue. I mean, if you talk about sort of the Overton window, the framing of this in public discourse, I mean, Trump has already moved.
This is another, I've got to reboot this, or redo the page. This is another clip so that it played off into this, but I think it's a great insight because some of these people who become very liberal at the same time they come up with truths that are kind of disquieting to other leftists. Check this out. David Brooks from the New York Times, a columnist who has been an incredibly disappointing columnist, said he had great respect for Obama because of how he ironed the legs of his khakis, you know. Kind of a person says that. Here we go. Ridiculous. It must be mental death to work for the Times, by the way.
Yeah, I generally agree. I mean, I don't.
All right. I promise this time I will not screw up. I'm blabbing when this stuff starts, and then I try to reboot it, and then it just everything. But anyway, there's so many bad writers that there's so many, I would say, dishonest people. I don't want to call them journalists at the New York Times. It's sad because the style at the New York Times is unparalleled, and it used to be the greatest paper in the world. I'm certain of it. Drum roll, please.
Panelists here, David Brooks, columnist for the New York Times, Amy Walter, national editor of the Cook Political Report, Danielle Pletka of the American Enterprise Institute, and Eugene Robinson, columnist for the Washington Post. Welcome all. You've heard all the interviews. David Brooks, do you have any better sense of where the president is this morning on this investigation?
You know, I'm actually getting more uncomfortable with this whole deal, thinking that maybe we're getting a little ahead of ourselves. And I'm bothered by the lack of emerging evidence about the underlying crime, that there was actually collusion or coordination between the Trump White House. And so what's happened is we've surrounded the president with this legal minefield, and Donald Trump, being Donald Trump, steps all over the legal minefield and blows him up six ways from Sunday. but it's become an investigation about itself. And, you know, I've lived through Whitewater. I've lived through a lot of these. And there's a lot of shady behavior that don't rise to the Watergate level. And I'm just afraid we're being swallowed up by the politics of scandal when there's less and less evidence that they actually colluded. Maybe that'll come out, but so far it hasn't, and it bothers me.
Yeah, I'm absolutely.
So what do you think of that? So why did it take this guy months to realize this, the truth? There really isn't anything there. So are you going to go try to kill somebody because they don't? It's back to the original question. What motivates people to want to, you know, you want to see somebody dead. You want to see them chewing the dirt, humiliated, put out of office, their movement completely discredited. And there doesn't seem to be any sense. I was saying something to somebody last night. There's this guy that broke into the house and he rapes this woman that's there, and she's 70, 71 or something. And I turned to that guy that I was sitting next to, and I said, have you noticed a lot of these criminals, they do stuff and they don't, from one moment to the next, they never even say, well, how is this thing going to turn out? You know, it's just, they don't care what happens the next moment. I mean, so what is going to happen if you did get rid of Trump? Is it really going to make the country better, or is it just going to prove your point? You really think Hillary is somehow going to worm her way into the presidency? We're going to totally repudiate our system by showing that what's more important than the democratic process, than the vote, is whatever it is wanted by the pundits, by the newspaper people. Is that what, you know, is that what we've reached here? Anyway, I got some weather for you. All right, so I had a couple of different ideas for you for what to play or what topic to bring up. And so I found a clip by the guy that was the number one aide to Bill Clinton, who helped him stay into office, who is now has come out on the right side quite a while ago. Democrats are committing suicide by moving left. I think this is very, very insightful from this from Dick Morris, who really helped Bill Clinton stay in office when he got in so much trouble. And this is in Arkansas to begin with. Check this out. I think it's full of insights.
Six, the deep state, my daily commentary on the news that I do every day at 6 o'clock to 6:30 Eastern time. Well, the Democratic Party is committing suicide. It's delightful to see, but they are moving to the left. A rally recently in Georgia that Bernie Sanders ran got a huge audience and tremendous applause. And throughout the United States, you're seeing Bernie Sanders people challenging the leadership of the Democratic Party. In California, for example, they've virtually taken over the Democratic Party. And in a whole variety of states, they're mounting huge and aggressive challenges. The establishment Democrats, for example, Emmanuel Cleaver, who's the head of the Black Caucus, are saying that we're not going to win a single seat if you guys continue to force us to the left and continue to force us to push for Trump's impeachment, for total government control of medicine, for free college tuition, and for lowering sentences on drug crimes, a whole range of stuff like that. Now, this phenomenon of Democrats and liberals moving to the left after they lose a major national election is historically a fact, and there's precedent for it, and it seems to be happening here as well. In the late 1970s, when Margaret, or actually more the early 1970s, when Margaret Thatcher defeated the Labour Party in her first of three successful elections in Britain. The Labour Party responded in Britain, not by moving to the centre like you thought they would, but by moving further and further to the left. They nominated a guy named Michael Foot to run for prime minister, and then another guy who, name I forget, but who was also an ultra-leftist. In fact, their platform was dubbed by one reporter the longest suicide note in history. And they came to be called the Loony Labour Left. And increasingly, they read themselves out of the political system. And it was only when Tony Blair came in after two defeats that he was able to persuade the party to move to the center. And then the same thing happened in the United States. When Jimmy Carter lost to Ronald Reagan, and when Jimmy Carter lost to Ronald Reagan in 1980, the Democrats did not move to the center. The next cycle, they nominated Walter Mondale, and 4 years later, they nominated Mike Dukakis. And it was only after two shattering defeats that they learned their lesson and nominated Bill Clinton, moving the party more to the center. That phenomenon is that whenever the left loses an election, a big election, when they're expecting to win, when they're shocked to lose, they respond by moving to the left. They say, we didn't do enough to bring out our base. We didn't do enough to highlight a clear contrast between us and the other party. We didn't do enough to really energize and motivate our supporters. So now we're going to go completely crazy, fall off the end of the earth, and go to strong and huge left-wing positions. And that's always been the norm of the Democratic reaction to defeat. Why? Well, part of it is that the moderates leave the Democratic Party and join the Republican Party. So they don't have that countervailing influence to keep the party in balance and keep it moved to the center. Secondly, the financial resources of the party for the moderates dwindle because the moderate people start giving money to the other side. And the Democrats may not adjust to the loss of all of those blue-collar supporters, those labor union types who were fundamental to their base, all of whom went for Trump overwhelmingly under, that is, single white men who are high school educated, the core of the gain that Trump made. So we can look forward, I think, to the Democrats moving further and further to the left and going crazier and crazier on the issue of this Russia inquiry and impeachment and everything else. And when they're doing it, they are really digging their own grave.
I thought that was pretty insightful. Now, switching gears, what must we do to keep Trump in office? And I was thinking about this. The House and the Senate are held by the Republicans. They need to get involved in this stuff. If someone is appointed prosecutor or a counsel, whatever, investigator, to look into the Russia connection, and they find out, as Comey stated under oath, that there was no connection between Trump and Russia, that person, that office needs to be closed. I mean, this thing, this idea that it's this free-ranging animal and can go out and eat anything it wants is extremely dangerous and is very destructive. And the people in the House and the Senate need to move. I mean, aren't you tired of seeing the cowardly GOP? The Democrats are as bold as lions, and the GOP are like, you know, they're cowards. I don't know what else to say. What do they think that they're going to gain by just sitting on their hands? Anyway, here is what we must do to keep Trump in office. Once again, Dick Morris. And what we're fighting for is not Trump. We're fighting for the ability to destroy a lot of evil things like political correctness, which is an abstraction, I realize, but to fight back against the continual growth of the state that is going to try to turn all of us into just little puppets of the state.
Most of us work very hard.
And we do have a phone call right before this starts. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Frankie. Let me tell you, this Dick Wallace guy is nothing but a used up nothing hack.
All right.
That's it. And then, well, because I don't want to interrupt you, so I'm stopping right there.
I appreciate it. So what did you think of my analysis of what drives people into socialism?
Well, I disagree with that.
How come?
I mean, right out of the box. You know, I mean, socialism, like I told you before, Sweden, Norway, Denmark, top 15 countries, you know, on standard of living and whatnot and so forth, they're all socialists. You know, so there's got to be something there.
But what about...
If socialism was so bad, you know, they'd be gone forever.
Well, I mean, I told you in Sweden that they have a new minister or, you know, prime minister who said that we're never going to go back to high tax and spend anymore because it's going to destroy the country. What happened in Sweden, because you kept mentioning Sweden, I went and did some research. Sweden was a very, very robust economy, and they came up with the Volvo and they had their own fighter jets and a very, very robust economy. That was the foundation. And then as they grew into a very wealthy and influential society without being very big, I think it was 5 million people, then the taxes came in. The tax and spend didn't create that economy. It fed on it. And as time went by, the economy got weaker and weaker until they had to kind of push back. That's my answer to you. But why do people buy into something where you see it in the USSR or China has totally failed? That's the full application of these ideas.
But how's China failed? They're rocking and rolling. They're communist.
How many people did Mao kill?
What difference does that make?
It makes a huge... Wait a second. Wait a second. Hold on. Name me countries in which huge number of people without any explanation whatsoever were lined up and killed by 100 million. As far as I know, Chairman Mao killed 76 million people. Stalin killed 74 million people. There's nothing like it in history.
All right. So what's your point on
my,
that? So
my point
a
is...
A lot of people get whacked.
Yeah, no. But doesn't it matter to you? My point is that it comes out of the same belief system. There's something defective in those beliefs.
Okay, you've got kooks on anywhere you go in the world. You're going to tag one particular political party or the other just because one kook at one particular time goes off the deep end? That's ridiculous.
Well, so in other words, there can't be anything wrong with Marx's ideas.
Well, I didn't say Marx. I'm talking the type of socialism such as Sweden, Norway, Finland, Denmark, Australia, and go on down the list. That they've got a nice little balance.
Yeah, but look
it's
at
simple as that.
Look at Europe as a whole. You can describe as the root of the economic problem there as high taxes and high unemployment, in which the economy never really grow because it's under this pressure.
All right. Well, look. Well, this is going to be too long and lengthy and drawn out. But Sir John Grubb explains it all out. And if you don't know who he is, ring him up and he'll explain how this all works out.
Sounds like a real worm.
Europe is doing fine.
It's underperforming. Can you call up with this discussion tomorrow, earlier?
Sure. I can do it. I'll get up earlier. I'll make myself some really good coffee and I'll give you a call tomorrow early.
Thank God. Okay. Thanks for the call.
All right. Bye.
Thanks, Frankie. All right. That's the perpetual question, which is, if this is so great, why doesn't it work? 752, 753, we'll be right back. Here's the bizarre comedian, Andy Erickson, who I don't know why, just because she's so weird, I enjoy her.
I love the Olympics. I think they're like the coolest things. Did you hear like the Olympics? Yeah. They're awesome. Do you guys remember the Olympics last year in Russia, the Winter Olympics? Yeah? Yeah, they're right. Sochi. Yeah, totally. But do you guys remember who won any of the events? No, right? These people prepare their entire lives. We can't even remember who won. But we'll always remember that Bob Costas had pink eye. Right? Isn't that awesome? That's so great. Okay, I have a joke about it. Okay, you guys want to hear a joke? That's why we're here. Okay, you guys want to hear a joke? Oh, I already said that. Who wants to hear a joke? It's time. All right, now we're ready. Okay, here it goes. How did Bob Costas get pink eye? Did Vladimir Putin his eye? Okay. I have another joke. Why does Walmart have a book department? No, that's the whole joke. I'm actually having a pretty good day. Today I ran away from home. You know, and I told my friend, and he's like, pretty sure I'm your 30s, just call moving out. touche. So, think about Santa Claus a lot lately. I'm so pissed at Santa Claus, right? Okay, because also, you should know, as much as I love Santa Claus, I love penguins even more, right? Yeah, aw, penguins. And Santa Claus is so awesome, and he's so mean to the penguins. You don't know that? He is. He's mean to the penguins, right? Because he has the magical ability to make animals fly. He has that ability. And the penguins are up there like, hey, we'll guide your sleigh. And he's like, I'm just going to import reindeer from Canada, right? And the penguins are pissed, you know? You know, 'cause I don't know if you know this, but Canada is like the North Pole's Mexico, right? They're like, they're stealing our jobs, you know? You know, and the penguins, they're up in arms, and they can't show it, you know? So I told that joke a couple weeks ago, and a guy came up to me after the show and was like, just so you know, penguins don't live in the North Pole. And I'm like, yeah. Either to Santa.
All right, so 7:57. And, well, summing it up, let's go blow up little Kim. Who does that guy think he is, anyway? Little dwarf. And, I do think that there is an emotional, anti-logical, religious commitment within socialists who, Frankie, doesn't realize socialism comes out of Marxism. He seems shocked, you know. And socialism was one of the steps that Marx outlined. Marx was just a guy that summarized all the ideas of everybody else. He wasn't really an original thinker. He was no Colonel Sanders of his day, but didn't come up with his own 7 special spices for his politics. But anyway, we'll get into this tomorrow. But hope you have a great day. Wonderful to hang out with you. Kelly O'Connell, 7:59. And take you out with some Gonzo's Blue Dream, James Booker. Have a great day, Chad.